from Sunburst Media Productions and Refuge Productions. This is Spectrum 360. Welcome. Your Spectrum 360 co-hosts are Mark Skogman and Bruce Wright. Spectrum 360 broadcasts live weekly on Mondays at 11 p.m. and online anytime via podcast. Thank you for listening for the next hour. Spectrum 360 is progressive and features political talk and humor and also the arts and popular culture. Spectrum 360 starts right now. Let's get to work.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Good evening, and welcome to Spectrum 360, the radio program for Monday, 30th of September, 2013, the last day of September, the last day of the quarter, and the last day of this particular program.
And we'd like to thank John F. Kennedy for that intro.
Yes, this is Mark Skogman.
And this is Bruce Wright.
And you indeed did hear former President John F. Kennedy in his inaugural speech in 1961. That was the famous, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country quote. And that's wonderful. In the program preview, let's see what we've got on tonight's program, shall we? I think we can do that. Yes. In segment one, we're going to have a brief discussion, a little retrospective on the ending of the television series, the cable television series on American movie classics called Breaking Bad.
Say it isn't done.
It is done, and we'll be talking about that. And then we're going to have a kind of strange segue into a... we're going to discuss Breaking Bad from the point of view of healthcare. Now, I bet nobody's ever done that before. And then we're going to have a segment, which is going to be a live telephone interview with Dr. Margaret Flowers. She's an advocate for healthcare reform in the United States. We'll be talking about healthcare reform, about the Affordable Care Act, the government shutdown, probably a little bit, etc. That'll take us to the bottom of the hour. After the bottom of the hour, we are going to have a poem by a local artist named, it's Luis Rodriguez, and we're going to hear...
He's actually from California.
Oh, I thought he was local. Excuse me.
But it's local via California.
Yeah, it's local because we've got the CD. And the track is going to be to the police officer who refuses to sit in the same room as my son because he's a gangbanger. That should be an interesting poem. We had a great poem on the program last week by Tom Earle called Dark, like the contradiction of the word itself. This will be this week's installment in terms of poetry. And then after that, we're going to have, in the final segment, we will have John Nichols. This is going to be a speech... recording of a speech that I did of John Nichols speaking August 10th last month on Saturday at the Madison Concourse Hotel in Madison, Wisconsin to the Progressive Democrats of America, speaking about his new book, Dollarocracy. Yes, Dollarocracy. This is going to be segment two of that speech. We're doing it in, we promised three parts. We're actually going to do it in four parts. This is going to be part two tonight. We'll have two more parts in the two next successive programs. And that's what we're going to have on Spectrum 360. So I think we should get right to our first segment here. And I've got an interesting perspective, a good way to start out this next segment, or our first big segment. I think you'll like this. You have just got to love that.
That is going to be the strangest kind of... You can't... Not only is the show memorable, but the theme song.
Yeah, it's the main title theme music for the main title sequence for the cable television program on AMC, or American Movie Classics, which is Breaking Bad. And the reason we're going to mention on the program this week is because the series and the latest season, which was the fifth season, and the last episode, the entire series, the entire season, the last episode aired broadcast last night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. The series is over, and it was quite an event. There were a lot of people watching the last episode of Breaking Bad, and then also watching the talk show about the dramatic program after that for an entire hour called Talking Bad, where they interviewed the actors and had their comments and some comedy and just more information about the series. They had a lot of the actors that were on the program on an expanded version of Talking Bad. It had been 30 minutes after each program for the last several programs this season, and then the final finale, Talking Bad, was 1 hour after the last episode of Breaking Bad. So it was Breaking Bad and Talking Bad. It was bittersweet. It was a great episode. It's been universally reviewed by most people as being excellent. And then Talking Bad was excellent, too, and it was a great way to end the series because we're all sad it ended, but we're all happy. It was such a great, great series. As Anna Gunn said last night on the Talking Bad program, the writing was just so excellent. It was just way up there. And the directing was excellent. All the production values were excellent. It was a great, great program, and it's part of television history now. And also, the series-ending party that Aaron Paul threw in Los Angeles last night raised $2.2 million for charity. I thought that was a very classy move. They donated all the profits from the way they promoted their series-ending party to charity. $2.2 million raised by a Breaking Bad for charity. I think that's a very, very classy way to end a program. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the aspects of the program that related to, of all things, healthcare. Because it was a very improbable, it's a very improbable story. It was improbable that it even started to get produced. It was even more improbable that it became a success, and such a huge success, where you have a 50-something white male who has lung cancer, and basically the story is a morality tale about what he does and doesn't do to save himself from the cancer and to support his family, et cetera, over five full seasons of television. So here the man has, he has major healthcare problems, and then he has major problems funding his healthcare, and that's the whole basis of the program.
And he's a teacher that doesn't make enough money to live off of. Now, mind you, we're not trying to justify anything he did, but it is kind of interesting, the background there. And then his son, who has a physical handicap as well, who needs healthcare. So I don't know. It's kind of strange. And then in the end, who ends up funding, taking care of the family as he passes on, is a corporate mogul, who really stole from him. And
yeah, the corporate partner in the corporation that they started was some kind of an intellectual property corporation.
Right.
I never can't remember exactly what they actually did, but the name of the company was Gray Matter, and that figured prominently in the writing of some of the episodes.
Well, it's interesting when you look at that and juxtapose it with the current crisis happening. You wonder to what extent are people going to go to take care of healthcare needs, and then you see a series like this, and boy, what can you say?
Well, one thing I want to say, that if you have healthcare problems and healthcare funding problems, it does not justify starting a methamphetamine lab, okay?
Absolutely
not. I'm going to take that position
not very
clearly on this program.
I think that's a little
program bit
contrary to healthcare.
Made a very interesting fictional series, but I do not recommend anybody try that in real life, okay?
Absolutely not.
But Breaking Bad has ended, so that's our coverage of that event. And now on to our next segment, segment two of the program, where we're going to have a live telephone interview with Dr. Margaret Flowers about healthcare and about her activism on the issue. I'm going to read a little bit of information about Margaret Flowers by way of introduction. Margaret Flowers is a Maryland pediatrician who for the last several years has devoted all of her energies to speaking out and organizing for a truly universal and comprehensive healthcare program, one that goes far beyond the law just enacted by Congress. And by that, we're referring to the Affordable Care Act, or quote, Obamacare, unquote. Rebelling against the daily injustices inflicted upon children and their families by a profit-driven health industry, especially the big insurances and drug companies, she left active medical practice in 2006 and resolved to work full-time for a healthcare plan that guarantees everyone the quality care they need and deserve. Margaret has since become one of our nation's most prominent advocates for a single-payer health program and improved and expanded Medicare for All, and we'll be talking about that. And unlike the health bill that has just passed, a single-payer plan would cover everyone without exception. It would allow for free choice of doctor and hospital, much contrary to the propaganda that says you won't be able to, and it would require no copays or deductibles. It would also cover the full range of Women's Reproductive Health Services. And with that introduction, we hope to bring Dr. Margaret Flowers on the program. Can you hear us?
Yeah, and let me just add one other thing. It was my pleasure to work with Margaret and, of course, our guest last week, Kevin Zeis, on organizing around the Occupy movement that happened in Washington, D.C.
October 2011.org.
That's right.
All of us were there.
Yes. And
Margaret was there. Kevin was there. Yeah, you were there, and I were there.
We were all there. And
was
you know,
there.
Was there. And it was a very, very much a pleasure, though, working before that event with her and Kevin and others as we organized for that occupation that happened. And just her work from that point on, in addition to what was mentioned, she is a member of the Green Shadow Cabinet and has been an outspoken proponent of single-payer health care, as was mentioned, and also a critic of some of the plans that have passed thus far, including Obamacare, which in roughly about 45 or 46 minutes from now, supposedly the government's going to shut down. So without further ado, Margaret, are you there?
I am, Bruce. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, yeah, so glad to have you on. Mark and I are pleased to have you on, and just your just amazing knowledge of this very issue. So I guess we could just start off, you know, we start off with a bit of a quasi dark humor situation with Breaking Bad. But what is your take on what's going on right now? You know, there is this Obamacare that was passed, but they're trying to prevent it. And of course, I know you advocate for something much more comprehensive. And so do we. Single payer.
But
kind of share with us your thoughts on this.
Well, I think that, you know, I don't pay too much attention to what the Republicans are doing because they're so far off base when it comes to healthcare. They don't have any solutions at all. And so what we see, you know, when they're doing these types of things around healthcare laws, it's really just politics. They're just playing politics. And I think, unfortunately, this game that they're playing is really going to backfire on them. It's going to cost them the elections probably in the midterm. So it's all theater, unfortunately. And so, you know, we'll see what happens. But
and it's theater with very real world consequences because they're, you know, they're causing all this trouble in Congress. Senator Ted Cruz was on the floor of the U.S. Senate when it wasn't in session doing a fake filibuster last week, reading Green Eggs and Ham to stop the Affordable Care Act from being funded. I don't think he was successful. I don't think reading children's books is actually a successful strategy.
And I don't think they'll be successful in defunding the health care bill either. It's really just theatrics that they're going for right now.
I wanted to ask you a question, Margaret, about I saw a video. It was either on television or online. It was several weeks ago where you were in a government office, I believe in Washington, D.C., during a hearing on health care. And you got up out of the audience and really dressed down the committee that was speaking at the time. And I have to say, I think you did a great job on substance. I was just totally supporting what you said. And I wanted to ask you, committee was that you spoke to very spontaneously from the side of the gallery there or the side of the room?
That's a great question because I've done that on a number of occasions.
Well, the last one.
I mean, the most recent time that might have been what you have seen that was when I went to the Wall Street Comes to Washington Healthcare Conference, which was held in October of 2011, just a few blocks from where we were occupying in Freedom Plaza. And that was a conference where representatives from Citigroup and JP Morgan and Goldman Sachs were talking about ways they could profit from the healthcare system. But there was the time, I guess one of the times before that would have been a conference that John Conyers had just before the healthcare bill passed, where he brought Dr. Howard Dean in, to basically tell lies about what the Affordable Care Act would do. And
well, let me stop you right there. I'm very interested in what your differences with Dr. Howard Dean would be, because I'm a member of a Democracy for America, which is the organization that Howard Dean started, and he's done a lot of good work. And I'd be very interested to find out how you differ with him in terms of healthcare policy, because he's also a doctor. So give us the differences between your position and his positions on these issues.
Well, his position, unfortunately, is to support whatever the Democrats do. So if the Democrats are pushing a Wall Street health care bill, that's what he'll support. And unfortunately, my that position is a position that isn't based on the evidence of what's best for the people in this country. And so my position is to really focus not on the partisanship. We've got to take this healthcare debate out of the partisan debate and really focus on what is it that we need in this country, what would work to solve our healthcare crisis, and then push for that no matter who's in office. We, the public, should be pushing for the real solution. Unfortunately, people, and this is how we ended up with the Affordable Care Act, were told by the Democrats this is all we can get, and so they went along with it. And I understand that because we have a healthcare crisis, and so people were thinking, well, a few more people are going to get insurance, that's a good thing. But overall, this piece of legislation takes us to greater privatization of our healthcare and still leaves tens of millions of people out completely, and more people with paying for insurance who will find that insurance doesn't come through when they need it. So it's, you know, really taken us in the wrong direction.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let me frame it this way. I know I'm an advocate for single payer myself, so I agree with your position completely. But at the same time, when the Affordable Care Act was passed, I participated a lot in getting the act passed. And a lot of people criticized it because it wasn't single payer, including myself. But at the same time, I also saw the Affordable Care Act as being progress in the right direction. And this concept of incrementalism, where you have to take some steps in order to get further steps done later on. And I thought it was a good step in the right direction. But there were a lot of people that are upset on the left, progressives that, you know, that were saying, well, he's not supporting single payer, which was he rejected out of hand, wouldn't even consider it. And I'm referring to President Obama. So what is your perspective on this incrementalism? Doesn't this at least get us closer to single payer overall?
Yeah, I support incrementalism when it pushes us in the direction that we need to go. What this does is it takes us in the opposite direction. It further privatizes our health care, and it's going to be very expensive. There are no cost controls. So it's ultimately going to fail, but in the meantime, it takes us, you know, it's going to fail in terms of the things that people want, which is actually universal health care, being able to get the care that they need when they need it without going bankrupt. This really takes us in the direction of further privatization. If you know, as it came down to the wire with the health care bill and we were in there constantly pushing, one of the things we said that we would accept with this bill would be to, instead of taking hundreds of millions of dollars and using it to subsidize the purchase of skimpy private insurance, those dollars should be put into our public programs. We should not be taking tax dollars and putting them into the private insurance industry, which is the problem in the first place. They're the ones that wrote the bill so they could profit off of it. Let's expand our public health programs and don't force people to purchase private insurance, which is just not going to be there for them when they need it.
Yeah, and I guess that was why, I didn't support it. And, you know, that's one of the beauties, of course, of having a show like this, because even amongst the hosts, we have differences, but we are both striving for the same kind of direction with things. But that was one of the reasons that I opposed it, was the whole, giving money to private insurance industry and the pharmaceuticals. And really, they're right. The ones that have caused us this pain and grief to begin with. So it's kind of like giving them the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, and that's one of the reasons I had problems with it.
Well, Dr. Flowers, let me ask you quickly, would it be acceptable for you to have a Medicare for all style single player plan? Let me try that again.
Oh, absolutely,
single payer
Medicare
plan.
For all, yes. That's what we were pushing for in Congress, and that was what we were trying to get into the debate. I think what people need to understand in this country is that the top corporations in this country are the health insurance corporations. The top CEOs, mm-hmm. top paid CEOs are not the oil industry. It's the health insurance industry. They have a tremendous amount of money, and they profit off of our health care system. And so they're the ones that are writing this legislation. We are never going to get the health care system that we need if we don't put up a fight for it. It's just not, you know, to think that the government with this type of dollars and influence is going to act in the interest of the public in this situation is naive. We have to actually make it happen. We have to make that demand, and that demand should come no matter who's in Congress. So, yeah, President Obama at the beginning would not talk about single payer, but what would have happened if the public had not accepted that? I mean, there was a group of us that were in there fighting constantly to try to get it into the agenda. But unfortunately, too many people believed what they were told by the Democrats is that they couldn't have that. And so they pushed for a public option plan when we knew that the public option was never going to be in the final legislation anyway. Max Baucus had already said in March of 2009 that it was a bargaining chip. So unfortunately, people were kind of lulled by all of this marketing and you know, theater that went on in Congress to make them believe that there was actual healthcare debate and process going on. But the whole thing was scripted from the beginning to be a Wall Street healthcare.
Well, yeah, I mean, Max Baucus, he was not helpful in the process at all. He was basically compromised, and he became a representative of the healthcare industry rather than a representative of his constituents. I think that's very clear. And also, I believe it was also former Senator Ben Nelson from Nebraska was basically doing the same thing. He was heavily influenced by the healthcare industry and was basically representing their interests in Congress rather than the interests of the American people.
Yeah, and
well, Baucus was the one driving the whole process.
Yes.
And he hired a staffer who was a former vice president of public policy at WellPoint to oversee that.
Yeah, and you know, the whole phoniness of this, as you're underscoring, is so important to bring out to people, because there's a third understanding of what's going on right now, and that is not the supporters of Obamacare or the Republicans fighting against it, but really what got lost in the translation, which is why we're glad we had you on, was this whole notion of single-payer healthcare. And really, when you think about people's well-being being put in the hands of profiteers, it is something that has to be discussed while all of this is going on and brought out to the forefront. And that's why we're, of course, honored to have you on it to discuss this, because it's such an important issue. And I know that Jill Stein made it a very big issue, too, when she was running for president with Sherry Hankala with the Green Party. And what is the next step, though? Because it's obvious this is passed, and it's going to, despite what the Republicans say, going to go into action. And, you know, of course, I have concerns personally because I have no health care at this point. And so I'm not sure what that's going to imply, especially for people that are low income. Maybe you could share a little bit about what the next steps are to continue to fight for single payer, but also what is this going to mean, this bill, to low income people?
I think it's important for people to understand that we are already spending enough money in this country on healthcare to provide high quality, comprehensive, lifelong care to every person in this country. And so that's the thing we have to go from, is that we already have all the resources and the money in this country to take care of everybody.
Yes, that's very true.
What this bill does is, and it does expand some Medicaid, and I'm not opposed to that. I think that, you know, our public health programs should be expanded. Medicaid is not an ideal insurance. It varies from state to state, and it tends to, you know, in some states the coverage is okay, but in others it's hard to find care. For the people who do not qualify for public programs like Medicare, Medicaid, or the VA, they'll be required starting in January of 2014 to purchase private health insurance. And so for people who don't have insurance currently, states are setting up something called an exchange, which is basically a place that will sell health insurance plans. But the plans that they're selling, unfortunately, are just really inadequate. What we fought for so long for was that health insurance plans should, at a minimum, cover 80% of somebody's healthcare needs. And what this law does is it says that it's perfectly okay to sell plans that cover 60% or 70%. Those levels of coverage for most people, unless you're extremely wealthy, mean that when you have a serious accident or illness, you're not going to be able to afford to get the care that you need. So, yeah, you've paid your premiums, your whatever, $100 or $200 or so dollars a month in your health insurance premium. But if you have a serious problem, you're not going to be able to afford to get that care. And if you get that care, you may end up going bankrupt. So we already know in this country that the leading cause of bankruptcy is medical costs. That's not going to go down under the Affordable Care Act. So this is the problem with it. The health insurance subsidies that the government is offering are only for the 70% coverage plans. So that's a very skimpy plan. The other thing that we're seeing, because the health insurance companies have been required by this law to accept everyone, even if they have a pre-existing health condition, is that the health insurance plans are restricting their networks. So they're limiting the number of physicians that they'll include in their networks. They're limiting the hospitals. They don't want the specialty hospitals, the ones that take care of actual sick patients, and they don't want the public hospitals in their networks. So they're, you know, patients are going to find that it's going to be, you may have insurance, but it's going to be hard to find a facility where you can actually get care that will be covered by that insurance.
Well, Margaret,
so I think people are going to find over the next year that, that they were really sold a bill of goods with this, with this, you know, law.
Well, Margaret, we, of course, want to thank you. Our time is up here, but I want to inform people how they can find out more about single-payer health care and the work you're doing. So if you can give us some kind of contact, that would be wonderful.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, the struggle continues, and actually we're having our national strategy meeting this weekend in Nashville, Tennessee. So you can go to healthcare-now.org. Healthcare-now.org is the national grassroots group fighting for single-payer health care. And then I'm the other is Physicians for a National Health Program, and that is PNHP.org. You can learn, there's lots of articles there describing what single-payer is. You can invite a speaker to come and speak to your community group about it. So visit those websites.
Well, Margaret, it was great to see you in Wisconsin and Madison as well at the Democracy Convention. We were all so busy that I didn't even have a chance to even say hi to you or Kevin Seisman when you were in town, and then you left pretty quickly. So a belated hello from Madison, Wisconsin that I didn't get to do there.
Yes, and thanks again for taking the time, Margaret, because this is such an important issue, and of course it couldn't be more current than now with the impending shutdown in allegedly 30 minutes. Thank you so much again, and we will be in contact for further interviews.
Great. Thank you, Bruce and Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you. And this is Spectrum 360 radio program on WTAN. We are going to take a break for news and some commercial announcements. We will be back with the second half of Spectrum 360 Poetry and John Nichols.
Stay tuned.
Affordable Health Care Act for a year. There are signs that some Republican unity is fraying, and President Obama said they will not let the health care law go.
The Affordable Care Act is moving forward. That funding is already in place. You can't shut it down. This is a law that passed both houses of Congress, a law that bears my signature, a law that the Supreme Court upheld as constitutional, a law that voters chose not to repeal last November.
While the government seems like it's shutting down at midnight, something else happens at the same moment. Obamacare takes effect and people can start signing up for it. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius says she'll consider the program a hit if...
Well, I think success looks like at least 7 million people having signed up by the end of March 2014.
This is NBC News Radio.
We're talking to Eric Serene, who's been with Bill Dawson at Best Services for 27 years. They're the official air conditioning service of the Tantalk Radio Network for more than 20 years. We all have air conditioners, and when it gets hot, there's a lot of problems with them because they haven't turned them on for a long time. Why should they call Best Services, Bill?
We provide 24-hour service, and obviously our guys have the experience and the expertise to provide quality service. And we're known for our honesty, integrity. You know, a lot of people could say that, but...
No, that's really important.
It really is.
We're talking to Eric Serene with Bill Dawson at Best Services. They have 24-hour emergency service. Here's how you reach them. In Pinellas, it's 727-773-0151. In Pasco, the number is 842, also 727-842-3357. Let me give you their website, bestservicesHVAC.com. BestServicesHVAC.com.
For all your home repair needs, call Ed's Handyman Services at 727-224-8681. For example, toilets, faucet, door locks, and much, much more. Impeccable quality work and reliable real-time service at an astonishing affordable price. Ed provides a clean, safe work environment from start to finish. Licensed, bonded, and insured, Ed guarantees all his work. So call Ed now at 727-224-8681.
You may be owed some money. After 911 and 411, call 541. That's 727-541-1741. Call Gulfstream Motorsports for a diminished value report. Due to my 28 years experience in the auto salvage business, I'm very good with wrecks. So if your car's been involved in a wreck, call me for a diminished value report. Call 727-541-1741. You may be owed some money for the lost value of your repaired vehicle. And visit us at GulfstreamMotorsports.com.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge
is all. Let's do it. What do we
What's
got?
With rich people?
I hate all of them. I'm just kidding. What is that?
We have lost so many young people who are the children of rich people.
And
the rich people are not stepping forward and saying, hey, we're gonna help get the message out. I don't get it.
The Prescription Addiction Radio Show, brought to you by Novus Medical Detox and Suncoast Rehabilitation. Tuesday nights from 5 to 7.
My husband just doesn't understand me.
Our teenage son thinks he owns the place.
My boss has some nerve.
Need relief from relationship pain? We've got the right prescriptions for healthy relationships. Discover timely solutions to common issues such as marriage conflict, parenting problems, job stress, and more. Our hosts, Mike and Harold, lead rousing discussions with great guests, and we take your calls, too. Tune in every Sunday afternoon at 5 o'clock for...
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
This is David Hobbs.
This is Bob Varsha.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
This is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
Hi, this is Robert Yates.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
I'm Ken Squire.
Hi, this is Edsel Ford.
Hey, I'm Dave Despain.
Hi, this is Danny Sullivan.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
Nostalgic Radio and Cars, Wednesday nights at 7 on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Alrighty then, welcome back to Spectrum 360. I'm your host, Bruce Wright, with my co-host, Mark Skogman. That's with one G, by the way. He's going to beat me later with a wet noodle. I put two G's. It was, I guess, one of those kind of dyslexic things or something. Anyway,
that's not my name.
Yes, don't call him Skogman. Just call him Skogman. But anyway, we're so pleased to have Margaret on earlier, and we're grateful that she was on for our segment on healthcare. Next, we have a segment of a poet that I know quite well. His name is Luis Rodriguez. He is from Los Angeles, California. Been very involved in activist circles, particularly on Latino rights, as well as union organizing among the Latino community, and is also with the League of Revolutionaries, which, by the way, we want to thank real quick a few of our sponsors before this poem comes on. We'd like to thank The Refuge. They can be reached at 727-278-1547. The Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. They can be reached at economichumanrights.org. Veterans for Peace, Chapter 119 in St. Petersburg. Look for them on Facebook. And Gennaro's Coffee House, 1047 Central Avenue North. Call 727-202-6956 for their many programs, including poetry on Saturdays and movies on Mondays. Without further ado, let's get to this poem by Luis Rodriguez.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do. Here's an excellent poem.
Mantle from your sloven sleeve and think it worthy enough to cover my boy. How dare you judge when you also wallow in this mud? Society has turned over its power to you, relinquishing its rule, turned it over to the man in the mask whose face never changes, always distorts, who does not live where I live but commands the corners, who does not have to wait the nightmares, the street chants, the bullets, the early morning calls, but looks over at us and demeans, calls us animals, not worthy of his presence. And I have to say, how dare you? How dare you? I'm only human. My son deserves to live as all young people. He deserves a future and a job. He deserves contemplation. I can't turn away as you, yet you govern us. Hear my son's talk. Hear his plea within his pronouncements, his cry between the breach of his hard words. Son speaks in two voices, one of a boy, the other of a man. One is breaking through, the other just hangs. Listen, you who can turn away, who can make such a choice, you who have sons of your own but do not hear them. My son has a face too dark, features too foreign, a tongue too tangled, yet he reveals, he truths, he sings your demented rage, but he sings. Because it is outside of you. He is inside of me. His horror is mine. I see what he sees. And if my son dreams, if he plays, if he smirks in the midst of moon glow, there I will be, smiling through the blackened, cluttered, and snarling pathway toward your wilted heart.
That was Luis Rodriguez. David Marsh, editor of Rock and Rap Confidential, characterized Luis Rodriguez's poems as some of the greatest in modern times, written from a very personal perspective as well as an understanding, a gritty understanding of the streets. That poem was called "To the Police Officer Who Refused to Sit in the Same Room as My Son Because He's, Quote, a Gangbanger." Again, Luis Rodriguez.
I would not, could not, in the rain, not in the dark, not on a train, not in a car, not in a tree. I do not like them, Sam, you see. Not in a house, not on a box, not on a, in a box. Not with a mouse, not with a fox. I will not eat them here or there. I do not like them anywhere.
You do. And as promised, we are going to have the
next
segment.
And that was not a good poet.
Yeah, we'll explain who that was in a little while. This is the next installment of our John Nichols speech. John Nichols, in the 10th of August, 2013, speaking with the Progressive Democrats of America about his new book, Dollarocracy, and about the problems we have with politics in this country. This is a great speech, and this is the next installment. Enjoy. About 16 minutes.
So I'm not going to give you the whole delineation of democracy and the demos, because that actually makes people kind of move away from it. You feel like it's separate from you. Democracy is exactly what your civics teacher taught you in fourth grade. It's not more complicated than that. Because when you were in fourth grade, I have a 10-year-old coming up, she's going to enter fourth grade. When you were in fourth grade, you still had an element of innocence. They didn't say, oh, by the way, it's a guy named Richard Nixon, right? You know, I mean, that would completely obliterate the whole discussion. No, what they say to you when you're in fourth grade is, yes, we have elections, and candidates present ideas. And based on those great ideas, we wrestle with it, and people think about what is best for the country, and then on this glorious day, the day Walt Whitman wrote poetry about, we would go to the polls and we would cast each of our ballots and they would go into a mass and they would actually be counted. And, well, the candidate you voted for. And then someone would be elected president or senator or mayor, and that person would serve in the interest of the people who elected them. That's what your fourth grade civics teacher taught you. And in that calculus, your vote was the most important thing. I mean, I know you got the candidates and the theater and all this other stuff, but at the end of the day, your vote was the most important thing. It's what mattered. The vote drove the process. Democracy was the vote. We fought and we died for the vote.
Please, sir.
We didn't fought and die for some Socrates' Greek concept of the demos. No, George McGovern flew that plane over Yugoslavia, dropping those bombs on the Nazis. He got shot down. He crashed that plane. He saved his crew, and he fought his way back to the front lines to fight again for the vote, for giving people the power. That's what this has always been about. Our wars have been about maintaining our right to run things, helping other people to run things. That's supposed to be the concept. But that's no longer the case anymore. We have not had an election in this country in modern times where the vote mattered more than the theater. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. And that's the difference between democracy, the vote, that woman right there, that guy right there, you matter more than anything else because you're going to cast a vote. Today, that matters less in the eyes of our media, in the eyes of our political class, in the eyes of many of us as citizens, than the dollar. The dollar becomes dominant. How dominant is it? You know, when Dennis Kucinich ran for president of the United States of America, you can love Dennis or hate him. Take what you want. I haven't known in this room many people actually like him. But you can say this about, you can also say this about many other candidates for president of the United States. You can say this about Jill Stein, who ran as Green last year. You can say this about all sorts of progressive, innovative candidates. You can even say this about some libertarian Republican candidates. You can say this about people who aren't, you know, who can't go to Wall Street and just pile it up. You know what they, you know the first thing they say? You know what the media says right off the bat? Can't raise enough money. The media refers to something called the dollar primary. Before you get to New Hampshire, before you get to Iowa, they say, well, how are you doing on dollars? And if you are not winning in the dollar primary, you're not a credible candidate. And you know what they actually do? This is the most brutal thing. Candidates know this. The big networks actually assign interns to travel with you when you're running for office. If you're a candidate, some kid, you know, you're the ABC intern, and whatever you, because they want to see you do something stupid, right? And so they write it down, and the ABC can broadcast it. And, you know, so like Jerry Brown was a gold mine. But the bottom line is that nowadays, based on how much money you're raising, at a certain point, they withdraw the intern. They say, we're not going to cover you anymore. Because you're not raising the kind of money that makes you a credible candidate. And you know what else they do? You saw this, actually, in 2008 in New Hampshire. Dennis Kucinich is still in the running for president of the United States. But he didn't have the kind of money the other candidates had. Now, it wasn't that he didn't have anything else. He had, this is what Dennis Kucinich had, mayor of a major American city, member of the United States Congress, former state legislator, critical player on issues that a lot of people cared about, war and peace, civil liberties, stuff like that. I mean, on balance, the guy had a great, you know, the paperwork was great. But what he didn't have was the money. You know what they said in the last debates before the New Hampshire primary? You can't be in the debates. Yeah, we know that you've actually served in public office longer than Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, or John Edwards. We know that you've served in public office pretty, if you add it all up, you've been in politics longer than all of them combined. But you can't be in the debate because you didn't, you literally did not come up to that debate, open up your wallet, right? Say, see, right? Because didn't qualify. And again and again and again, in American politics, this is the reality. The dollar matters more than the vote. The dollar beats the vote. And if the dollar beats the vote, then we got to stop calling ourselves a democracy. And we got to start calling ourselves a dollarocracy. And if we're a dollarocracy, brothers and sisters, the battles of Tom Paine and Harriet Tubman, Ida B. Wells, Martin Luther King Jr., Gloria Steinem, everybody that we have honored across 250 years of American struggle, every vet that went off to march in war, those values are under attack at home, not from some foreign enemy. We are under assault right here. Because remember, we go out around the world to defend democracy. Well, democracy is getting beat by dollarocracy in Madison, Wisconsin, in Lansing, Michigan, in New York City, in Washington, D.C. And brothers and sisters, Bob and Chesney and I wrote this book because we want to rip open this discussion. We want to transform this discussion. And we want people to have a clear picture of what the real debate in America is about. It's not Democrat or Republican. It's not liberal or conservative. It's democracy versus dollarocracy. And we're problem, right? Because what I've done now in the first few minutes of talking with you folks is tell you what you already know. And you know, I want to emphasize that there's nothing a crowd likes better than being told what they already know. Especially if it's what they already agree with, right? No, it's a painful reality that we often come out and repeat the knowledge that we have and maybe put a better phrase on it, a better spin on it. But the point of this book is something very, very different than that. We want a better understanding of the whole thing. And so this is not a book about money and politics. And I understand, I want to pause, underline that point, put a big circle around it. This is not about money and politics. Because if it was just about money and politics, that's a very simple concept. What's happened here is something far, far more serious. We've become a dollarocracy. Not, or we are becoming. I think we still got threads of democracy in play, and that's why we fight on. But we're becoming a dollarocracy, not merely because the Supreme Court issued the Citizens United ruling. You know, Citizens United ruling, that didn't exist. You know where we'd be? In the glorious days of 2009.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the fact of the matter is that all the Citizens United did was put a cherry on top of that incredible cake that they had baked over 40 years for the Koch brothers and for Karl Rove and for people like that. The reality is that we have to be very, very careful about presuming that there's just one bad thing that happened. No, no. We've had 40 years of bad thing that happened, and it has piled up to a reality now that in the money and politics circumstances, that woman's going to come sit right by you. In the money and politics situation, it's very serious. We understand the conundrum there. But if it was just that, we could make it. You know why? It's very interesting because it's going to sound absurd when I say it, but we'd still have our free press.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No matter how much money they put in, the free press.
No.
The free press. You know, boy, I tell you what, you know, Tom Paine walking down that street with the first copy of Common Sense. The abolitionists printed out those abolitionist papers saying we've got to take on slavery. Woodward and Bernstein taking down Richard Nixon. The free press. That's only one problem. Free press barely exists in this country anymore. And I don't say that casually. I'm not even talking about the quality. I'm talking about the quantity. The fact of the matter is, every day in America, more journalists are laid off than hired. Every day, every week in America, more newspapers close down than open up. In fact, over the last 5 years in this country, we have seen daily newspapers in Seattle, in Denver, in Albuquerque, in Phoenix, in Tucson, in Kansas City, Kansas, across this country, daily newspapers literally shut down. And that's the good news, because some daily newspapers actually stayed open with no staff, right? And so then it's even worse. They give you the fantasy that they're covering the news. You actually think it's being covered, but there's nobody out going doing the job. And you know this. I'm not telling you something you don't know. It's just you don't think about it in the context of what it's done to democracy. Because the fact of the matter is, when you have an election and it isn't covered, and we know that happens all the time, when you have an election and it isn't covered, the only place where people get their information is from the ads. Right? Unless they're super citizens and PDA members and Vets for Peace. We know they are all sitting on the internet at 4 a.m. checking the email. But you people are not the mainstream of the American experiment. The mainstream of the American experiment is, unfortunately, not checking the internet at 4 a.m. to see what just happened. It's getting what little information it does from TV news, from a little bit of radio, and from a newspaper now, where there literally is more space devoted to the comics. I guarantee you, any day, there is more space devoted to the comics than to your local government. Guaranteed. More space to the horoscope than to your county government. They don't do it anymore. Television doesn't do it. Radio doesn't do it. TV does, or newspaper doesn't do it, and the internet doesn't do it. Because the internet, as much as we love it, what the internet does, by and large, is take what TV, radio, and the newspaper did and reposition it, and maybe they comment on it. But how do you comment on nothing? You call it Fox. But... The fact of the matter is that we have dumbed the debate down so much, we have squeezed so much journalism out of this thing. Even bad journalism is better than no journalism, I'll tell you it is. But it's just not there. You know, if somebody comes and covers your meeting, they do a lousy job covering it, you can call them up and say you did a lousy job covering the meeting. But if nobody comes to cover the meeting, who do you call? What do you do? How does anybody know that you met? You are the tree that fell in the forest and made no sound. And so, we've got this collapse of journalism. It's very serious. We lost the better part of 30,000 newspaper employees between 2008 and 2013. We've lost, since 1996, when they passed the Telecommunications Act, we've lost an estimated 19,000 on-air personalities in radio. Television stations across this country are now shaving minutes off their local newscasts, which is the primary source of information, so they can fit in more campaigns. Now, you understand? And those television newscasts, if you do actually watch them, what are you going to learn? What are you going to know? Down a wreck. Come on, that's just a little bit. Do you know what you're really going to know? You're going to know the weather. You're going to know so much about weather. Do you realize that if citizens knew as much about politics and government as they do about the weather, we would be the most informed and engaged citizenry in the history of the planet. No doubt about it. When you watch your evening news, I promise you, you only have to do this once, and you never have to do it again. Go watch your evening news tonight. Do you know what they're going to do? It's going to start up, and they're going to say, "Welcome to the evening news. The United States and Russia are recreating the Cold War. Obama's not going to go meet with Putin. We've got, 8% unemployment, except if you're black, and then it's 15% unemployment. Except if you live in a city, and then it's 25% unemployment. Except if you're under 50, and then it's 50% unemployment. You know, it's like,
and there you have it. That's installment two, segment two of the great John Nichols speech that I was able to, very fortunately, able to record in Madison, Wisconsin at the Madison Concourse Hotel when John Nichols was addressing the Progressive Democrats of America, Wisconsin state meeting there on the 10th of August, 2013. And we have some more people to acknowledge.
Yeah, and we want to thank some additional supporters of the show, including Relax at Home, licensed massage therapists. Call Patricia at 813-784-7485. My Place in Recovery, an addictions recovery program, as well as a thrift store that's having its grand opening this Saturday. Please call 727-244-0427 about the grand opening of My Place in Recovery thrift store.
Be thrifty.
The Catholic Worker, 727-278-1547 in St. Petersburg. And, of course, the League of Revolutionaries for New America, LRNA.org. Next week, we are going to have a show on racial profiling, including a local guest, the president of the National People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, who recently was racially profiled. Tune in next week, 1340 a.m. That's TANTALK1340.com. You can look for a podcast of this show next or tomorrow
night. Spectrum 360. Spectrum 360. We'll see you next week for another great program. Thank you for listening.
That's all, folks.
We can make it happen. Yeah. We can make it happen. We can.